of psychology and pop culture had a baby, they'd call it Shrink Tank.
A new paper reveals more intelligent people are quicker to learn and unlearn.
90% chance that there's some like weird animal out there.
Yeah. Howard Stern's been doing this forever. And far more extreme.
From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. And welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville, and we've got a great show for you. Our trending topic today is Oprah. We'll get to that later. But first, let's meet our Charlotte panel. Dr. Emma Kate Wright is here. Hello, Emma Kate.
Hi, Dave.
What'd you do on your snow day? You guys were out last week. What'd you do?
Okay, well, I was very fortunate to be able to go play out in the snow with my significant other. And so that was a lot of fun. Had a good snowball fight, made a snowman. And then I have been studying for my licensure exams. So I got extra study time.
Wow. Tell that story again.
I know. It's just, you know, my life has been really boring.
We'll devote an entire podcast to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm for that.
Frank, how about you? Dr. Frank Gaskell's here. And Frank, what'd you do on your snow day?
I played with my whippets. And that didn't sound right, but I played with my whippets.
Sounded just right to me.
And then my kids did a lot of sledding, and it was pretty chill, and I loved it. We got about 6-7 inches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was more like 3 or 4.
I was going to say, that's why Frank's bad at math. Yeah. I think it was more like 3.
Well.
Jonathan Hederle's here. He's Woo-hoo! Our certified Asian. He rounds out the panel. Jonathan, what'd you do on your snow day?
Basically nothing. I think I watched a lot of Netflix. I ran on the treadmill. It was an excuse to... Oh, no, that's not true. I went to IHOP.
Wow.
The first day.
By yourself.
I went to IHOP by myself. It was marvelous. Creepy. I like going to restaurants by myself.
Did you get, you know, the runs?
No, I have a stomach of steel.
That's true. He really does.
I could eat a live dog, and
it would
not.
Like a Korean.
Oh, boy.
Was that an Asian reference again?
It was.
Getting ready for the Olympics.
Oh, boy.
Olympic eating game.
Yeah.
So, Jonathan trolls the internet each week, and he finds a great story of psychology in the news that we call...
Being Human.
Frank, I have a question for you. Don't you hate it when your Mercedes has, like, car problems, or sometimes it's so cold you can't use the pond that's outside of your home?
A, my car doesn't have problems.
Oh.
B... I don't know how one would use a pond.
Okay.
Say it.
Well, the reason I ask is because there is a study that found that humble braggers are unlikable, untrustworthy, and irritating. So, according to the Urban Dictionary, a humble brag is defined as subtly letting others know about how fantastic your life is while undercutting it with a bit of self-effacing humor or woe is me. Researchers from Harvard and Chapel Hill conducted a study and found that people actually hate humble bragging more than regular boasting. And they found two types of humble brags: complaint-based brags, showing off in a form of a complaint, you know, complaining not having the right shoe to wear because all your shoes are so good. Or the second type of brag involves humility, like a person saying, I wash my cars by myself because all 7 of my supercars are precious to me. So... Emma Kate, how well do you pick up on people humble bragging, and do you find it more irritating than regular boasting?
Yes, I think I pick up on this pretty clearly within social media, and I absolutely think it's worse than just bragging. And even when I was preparing for today, I was kind of just like perusing around, and I found some really great ones. So this was a tweet where someone said, I'm wearing a ponytail, rolled out of bed from a nap, at the bar with my guy, and guys are still hitting on me. Like, really? So there is that one.
That's great.
And then another really good one that I found here was, let's see, it was, I just did something very selfless, But more importantly, it was genuine. And I know it meant a lot to the person in the long run. Hashtag so worth it. So I was just like, wow, like good for you for sharing that. Yeah. So because I was actually, there's a whole thing on Twitter for humble bragging. It's at humble brag where you can just call people out. And so that's where I found these from. But yeah, so I think it's really obnoxious personally. You're just fishing for compliments.
Yeah. And I kind of went through various friendships I have, and it just it stuck out that some of the people I know that irritate me, that's sort of at the core of one of the reasons why they irritate me, and I've never really focused on that. And that term humble bragging, never run across it, but it totally fits.
Without saying a name, can you think of a particular person that does that a lot in your life?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And what do they do?
Like, oh, it was really hard to get all these signatures. And has anybody ever done that before? No, really? It's sort of fishing for this compliment.
Like I've done all this stuff. It was really hard for me. Did anybody else have that kind of trouble?
Yes. Makes me crazy.
Jonathan, yeah. Anybody in your life like that?
Yes, but I think over time I've blocked them on my social media so I don't have to be exposed to it as often. The most reoccurring type that I come across, because I'm not really on Instagram that much, but a lot of Instagram, oh, yeah, a lot of the visual is humble bragging. It's like putting up something so glossy or whatnot and then some type of complaint or life is hard. But on Facebook and stuff, it's usually in the form of bragging about their parenting or their kid. And I'm just like, you know what? Okay.
I just posted that today. My daughter won second place in a swim meet.
And so a lot
just
of
just proud of her is all.
A lot of people don't know this, but yes, I have blocked them on social media. I don't see any of their stuff
so
anymore.
So you blocked Frank recently?
Is Frank on Facebook?
Does he? Oh, wait, that's right.
Okay, nice. Yeah.
Does Frank Moving use on. Social media at all?
Yeah, is Frank on social media? Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, no, I think I'm with you on Instagram being a higher culprit of that because, you know, I follow a bunch of girls, obviously, because I am a lady, and they will – I've seen it several times where they'll post a picture of themselves with no makeup on and then someone would be like, oh, you're so beautiful in a comment, and then they're like, stop, I don't have any makeup on, I look terrible.
Ew.
And then it's just like, this is awkward.
Ugh.
So
Instagram sucks.
So is this something that just has been more of a deal with social media? I mean, I would think it would be, right? It's something that social media has really, I don't want to say created, but really like fanned the flames of.
I think it's been there all along. We're just seeing it everywhere. It just gives a platform for people to do it.
It gives a platform, although I will say I think Instagram in particular because it's the visuals. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times people just don't realize how crass they come across with whatever they post with a video and how it translates to be incredibly off-putting.
Well, and if it's a private account, they're just surrounding themselves with little worshipers. So it does reinforce it on some level.
Yep.
So do you think that people that do this, like in real life or on social media, tend to be self-aware? Like, do they know that
No.
they're doing it, or is it just like they're just like a zero on the self-awareness scale?
Zero.
I feel like they might have some awareness of it in the sense that they know that they feel good when they get that affirmation from people. But I do feel like they lack a lot of awareness.
Well, I guess we would just have to ask, Frank, how much self-awareness do you think you have?
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, when I read this article, I'm sitting here thinking, do I do this? Like, I don't think I do it. And then I was talking to people in the room and I asked, like, do I do this? And the answer was, well, what's the definition of it? And I described it, and there was this kind of a long pause. Wait a minute. But I don't think I do this. Do you?
Okay.
I don't. Okay.
He's like, I don't want to open that. I don't want to talk about it.
I don't think I do this.
And I don't have sarcasm.
Okay.
So.
There it is.
The world is right.
So there it is. All right.
Whew.
Well, let's shift gears and talk about our trending topic today, which is Queen Oprah. Oprah. She's back in the news again. Oprah, who never leaves our consciousness and who is the queen of the world, had this stellar Golden Globe speech, which, to be honest, was one for the ages. I mean, it was a great speech. And then immediately after that, people started talking about Oprah running for president, and we'll talk all about that in a little bit. But let me just go around the horn here and ask you guys your impression in general of Oprah. Like, what's your kind of take on Oprah? What's your thoughts about her? Emma Kate, how about you?
I think she is truly the sort of larger-than-life person, just in the sense where she feels very authentic and genuine, and she has worked so hard to get to the position that she is in her life. And, you know, she's a businesswoman, obviously. She's extremely powerful and influential between, you know, having the talk show, her book club, her magazine, her cable TV network. I mean, she has just found ways to infiltrate all sources of business and media, and yet she uses that power and influence for good. And I just think she's an incredible person without actually knowing her, because I think a lot of times we all feel like we know celebrities, but I think what she portrays, it at least feels as though that is truly who Oprah is, that she is this kind woman who wants to help people and is in the position to be able to do so.
Would you want to have dinner with Oprah?
Absolutely. I would love to. That would be amazing.
You'd want to hang out with Oprah.
Yep.
You and Oprah and Gail.
I don't know a lot about Gail, but if she's cool with Oprah and Oprah's cool with her, then sure, she can come.
Gotta be. Frank, your general take on Oprah.
Well, a couple things. I never want to like her, and I don't really know why.
I know why.
It's just... Wow.
What?
It just... I don't know what it is, but my
Jonathan knows what it is.
The funny thing about Oprah is she's nostalgia for me, because if I was homesick, which was often, I was watching Donahue, I was watching these talk shows, I was watching Oprah, and it was interesting. And I think it's amazing how she has carved out all these niches in terms of a book club and a TV channel, a TV show. I don't know how any one human being can do that, and it's mind-blowing. But I'll tell you, my favorite memory of her was when I was a small boy. I was growing up in Nashville, and I remember that she was only 19 and was the youngest black woman on a news channel, and I was like, man, that's an inspiration. That's
you remember that?
Inspiration. I do, yeah. That? Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Long time ago.
Long time ago.
Long time ago. Jonathan, how about you?
Oprah comes across very likable, very relatable, but you know there is a tenacity and ferociousness beneath that. And I think that when you consider the landscape of her success and how she has probably had to fight for every inch of success and opportunity as a female, as a woman of color in the 70s, 80s, and since then, you don't arrive at that level of success without that tenacity and determination. So I think that's a really cool combination, that she has what it takes to be very successful and visionary, but she comes across as incredibly likable and relatable.
I had one other memory. Two things I want to say about this. It speaks to resiliency and how trauma can make you better version of yourself. And I feel like that's sort of what happened with Oprah. And I look at other people like Howard Stern, his kind of childhood trauma and how that you respond to that trauma. And she's one of these people that without that early childhood trauma, which I wouldn't want to wish on anybody, she may not be who she is. That's part one. Part two, I will say that I knew an older person who was very racist. And I was related to this person, and
was that person you?
No, it was not me. And I thought, I'm going to take this person to the color purple. And they asked, what's this about? And I said, oh, it's about this royalty thing. It's sort of medieval, whatever. And I sat down and made that person watch this movie. And I was laughing the whole time. So there's that.
It is a very laughable movie.
Yeah, it's the feel-good movie.
Feel-good movie of the year.
Yep. That's it.
Well, you know, one thing that struck me with that speech that she gave is she is, I would say, maybe the best living communicator that we have. And I mean that on all levels. I mean, like, for just in terms of being able to deliver a speech and move people and communicate important ideas and draw people into a point of view. I mean, there's nothing, no one that can match that, I don't think. And she's an impressive person. I mean, she's a fantastic communicator. She is an accomplished person on, you know, a television and film personality. She's been nominated for 2 Oscars. She's gotten countless other awards. She's produced things. She's run her own network. I mean, this is a pretty incredible person. I'm kind of agreeing with you guys. I think the vibe that you get is that's who she is. You know, I don't know how she would be in her personal life, in terms of like whether she would be a good person to hang out with or not, but man, I have a ton of respect for her. So that kind of brings us to, I think where our consensus is, we're all about Oprah. We love Oprah, but the buzz after that speech, which by the way, great speech, right? Was Oprah for president. That was the trending Twitter hashtag. That was the talk on social media. That was talk on news programs. What's your take on that? Jonathan, do you have a thought about Oprah running for president?
Well, I think she inspires hope. I think that's one of the elements that she is able to communicate in her speeches. And she inspires people. She inspires them to call to action. She is the ultimate optimist and positive thinking. But I think it would be a horrible, horrible idea for Oprah Winfrey to jump into politics, partly because I don't think what she is great at translates into the machinery of politics. But the other is, I think we need someone like Oprah just to be Oprah and have her own platform and have somebody that's willing to grind out years and years of public service and sacrifice, go in and help change Washington. I think she would be the ultimate collaborator, but in terms of going into politics, I would be strongly against, because on the surface, she has as much experience as Donald Trump. And what we need right now with all of the complex issues we're dealing with is somebody that has concrete ideas and can work across the aisle to create real change.
I do not want Oprah to run, because she does stand for something greater. And in terms of whether she'd be a good president or not, I don't think we can really answer that, only because we're comparing apples and coconuts. I mean, Trump is that's a whole different ball of wax.
And different coconut.
Yeah. If you look at the character of her and her qualities, okay, yeah, that'd be awesome. But I wouldn't want that for her. And I, you know, being a politician and running government is a whole different skill set. It's a bureaucracy and it's tedious, exhausting, and she'd end up with gray hair too, which would suck.
Yeah, I feel like we need people in that position that actually have experience with governing personally. And I think, you know, it's hard to say how successful or unsuccessful she might be, but I just worry. It is not an easy job, period. And I guess my personal opinion is I would like someone with more experience. As great as Oprah is, I don't know. I wouldn't be comfortable with that.
I'd love for her to be the Aaron Sorkin of the next president, that she would write their speeches.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of actually creating policy, I want a politician.
I will say, though, to piggyback on a comment you made earlier, Jonathan, is that she really does, in terms of being persuasive and getting people to follow and call to action, the hope piece and that inspirational aspect to her is what is so critical, because a lot of times nowadays, especially with the media, I feel like there is a lot of fear mongering where we're trying to get people to be afraid. If you don't do this, this will happen. But taking a different lens to it and having that hope that there is, you know, as she said, a new day is on the horizon in her speech, like that really does inspire you to want to do something versus shut down and say, wow, everything is really crummy right now. I'm afraid. And so I feel like we need her to we need her to write the speeches.
Well, and we need her to inspire people to run and not be afraid to run. That mm-hmm. It can be a different political world.
Well, I will say, I agree. I don't think she should run. And right now, she's not polling better than Biden or Bernie Sanders, even. So it's not necessarily that her polling is so great that she's got to do it. She's the front runner. But I'll play devil's advocate on the other side. Michael Moore, the documentary filmmaker, who is one of the few people that called the election before in the right direction. He said Trump's going to get elected, and he nailed it. He nailed the reasons why, how it would happen, all that stuff. He says you got to fight fire with fire. And he says now the way people are thinking, it's like this is a celebrity, a familiar person. You know, we connect to them on television. So we need to put Tom Hanks up there or Dwayne The Rock Johnson or Oprah or something like that. You know, he's basically saying desperate times require desperate measures. And so we've got to fight fire with fire, put a celebrity up against a celebrity in order to win. Do you think that has any merit?
No, I don't. Not so much that Tom Hanks is unlikable or Oprah couldn't win, but, and this is personal opinion on my part, but I think when Donald Trump ran, I would argue our government and our reputation in the world was much better than it will be when the next election comes around, and the landscape of what the presidency will inherit more so than ever. We will need somebody that understands and can work through both domestic and international problems, because they're going to have to clean up the blank storm that Donald Trump has created for America. He didn't inherit that. Donald Trump didn't inherit Donald Trump presidency. He inherited 8 years of Obama doing his best. And I mean, I thought he was a very good president. We could certainly highlight some of his shortcomings. Nobody's been perfect. But I think the America and the international landscape that Trump inherited will be different than whoever is president in 2020.
Yeah. How about you, either of you two? Do you think there's some merit to put a celebrity up against a celebrity?
I mean, I guess where I stand, it's like, okay, if it's a celebrity, fine. If it isn't, fine. We just have to, I feel like we're losing some of that trust in democracy and in the process. And, you know, and I'm even guilty of it myself, where like I was very dissatisfied with how this election turned out. But the reality is, like, as Americans, we have to trust in this process that is democracy and be more graceful in terms of if, you know, this person wins the office, then that person wins the office. However, that doesn't mean we can't still be actively pursuing, you know, our own political beliefs and trying to encourage that. But I guess, and maybe this is something, I mean, I am younger, but it could just be something that has historically happened. But it just feels like right now there's a lot less belief in how our system works. And I don't know if you guys would agree with that or not, but it just feels like we don't trust the government and its process. And I think that's the bigger issue. And we are so polarized. And yeah.
I mean, I'll say, talk out of two sides of the mouth. Number one, yeah, I feel like we need somebody with experience in there that knows how to, you know, run a giant ship. On the flip side of that, I don't want Oprah to win, but it would be nice to, how to phrase this, to bring some polish or something back to the presidency.
Dignity.
Class.
Dignity. And my concern is, I do not believe America is still a democracy, number one. I think we're an oligarchy. I think we're closer to having money is driving this ship, and that's an oligarchy. That's what it is. You got the Koch brothers and all these other people. And to create a true democracy, there's going to have to be some kind of a political revolution. And I don't think that can happen because all the dignified and sort of McCain type people, they're not going to run. They're not going to get into this mess and ruin their
who
lives.
Would? Who would?
Just a narcissist.
Yep. So to wrap up here with Oprah, so if she doesn't run, which good chance she will not, what do you hope her role is over the next couple of years on the political scene and also just kind of in on the social landscape? What would you hope that her role would be? Emma Kate?
Well, I feel like she is going to continue to do what she has been doing. I mean, her endorsement of a particular candidate is like guaranteed several million votes potentially. And I mean, she has a track record of being influential with legislation. Like, I think she helped when Bill Clinton was president in the 90s with like a registry for the pedophiles or sexual harasser. I can't remember what it was, but I think she does. She is involved, and I think that's what she needs to continue to do.
I would like to see her get behind both Republican and Democratic women that are running. There's some huge number of women that are running or expected to run, and I'd like to see her get behind them and maybe build a more bipartisan group where she's just not like, oh, I'm Democrat, I'm Republican, but that she's supporting people with reasonable values.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think she'd do a really good job if she got behind causes versus a particular candidate. But I do think that she is the best example, but she is the tidal wave of advocacy we can expect because what has been happening in our country is really provoking celebrities and those that may lean liberal to not just be complacent or just kind of be passive in the political process. They're recognizing they need to be going out and participating in marches. They need to be letting people know what they do stand for and champion it and put some time, money, or something behind it. So I think Oprah and her Golden Globe speech is indicative and hopefully what we can expect in the coming years leading up to the 2020 election.
Very good. All righty, Oprah. We hope for good things. Let's wrap up the podcast with a conversation about Oscar nominations, which came out this week. Let's talk a little bit about Oscar. And let me tell you the Best Picture nominees and ask you, of the ones that you have seen, which one you have liked the most. Not necessarily which one you think is going to win, but which one you've liked the most. So the films that were nominated for Best Picture this year were Call Me By Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. So have at it. We'll start with Emma Kate. Any of those that you've seen that you really liked?
Well, it's great that you started with me, because since I have been studying for my licensure exam, I have seen one of those movies. So I'm going to vote for Get Out, because that's what I have seen. Which, but in all honesty, that was a great movie. It really, I'm so happy that it got nominated, because it was so different and so unexpected, and it was creepy. So I'm happy about that.
Frank?
Well, I would like to add that usually I cannot speak to these movies, but I set a record. I saw four of these films, and that never happened. So I'm like humble bragging, you know. I saw them. So there's that. I saw The Post. I saw Dunkirk. I saw Three Billboards and Get Out. And I'll tell you, I loved all of them except Three Billboards. I hated that movie, and I can't believe it got nominated. But I'd say Dunkirk, it was the most emotional experience out of all the films, and it left me thinking about it for days after. And it's just really hard to watch because it brought such contrast between the way the world was then and sort of brave men and the way the world is now.
Jonathan.
Yeah, I haven't seen that many movies. I've only seen three, so Frank is actually outpacing me
at this
point.
Wow, that's a miracle.
I have not seen The Post yet. I've seen Three Billboards, Get Out, and and Dunkirk. And right now, Dunkirk, to me, is still the film to beat for. It's the best film that I saw this past year on a technical level, on an emotional level, seeing it on the big screen, too. I really feel bad for those that didn't catch it on the big screen and now they're watching it on a screener or on their plasma TV or HD, because that movie and the sound was just so engulfing. It was unlike, to me, it ranked up there with seeing Avatar in 3D as just a cinematic experience that you just had to see on the big screen like that. And I've actually written a piece on how much I hated Three Billboards, and I try to go in depth of the reasons why. It's not just critical backlash, or it's not just the racial politics. I think from a storytelling and from a filmmaking, I think the movie has a lot of problems. So, but that seems to be sort of the brewing narrative is the backlash against Three Billboards. So I know I'm not alone, and I know plenty of people do love it. So,
well, I've seen 7 of the 9, and the two that I haven't seen, one of them was Three Billboards and the other was Call Me By Your Name. You almost have pushed me off of going to see Three Billboards, but I think I'm going to see it just because I want to see all 9 and then be able to rank them. And we'll put that on shrinktank.com. But of the 7 that I've seen, which would be Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, and Shape of Water, I would agree Dunkirk for me is the best movie and my favorite movie. Although I will tell you, I really like The Shape of Water. I thought it was really fun and a very well done, unique movie. The performance in Darkest Hour is worth seeing. The movie's not the greatest of the lot, but the performance is definitely greatest. And the others are okay. I'm a big Paul Thomas Anderson fan, but I didn't love Phantom Thread. And I'm a little surprised that it got nominated. Thought The Post was terrific. Lady Bird's great. Get Out's great. I mean, there's some good movies on here. Overall, I don't know that this is the strongest year in a while, but there's some good movies in there. But I'd pick Dunkirk. How about this? Next podcast, I will give you a brief Oscar quiz of Oscar past and Oscar present. So you will have to...
I got to start studying.
Start studying for that.
No All right. more.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. We hope you'll check out shrinktank.com for great articles and videos, including an article that I wrote on 10 happy surprises of this year's Oscar nominations, and also Jonathan's article on why he hates Three Billboards. You want to check that out on shrinktank.com. Also, follow us on Twitter @shrink_tank and like us on Facebook. Our producer and music composer, Sean Beck. For Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Heatherly, and Frank Gaskell in Charlotte, I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville. Tell all your friends about us and make it a great week. Shrink Tank.